Thank you, guys. It is always a powerful thing to listen to joys and sorrows, the specific joys and sorrows that come through. And today, I just have to say, I was profoundly moved. There's a lot going on in the world and in the congregation. So this poem is by a great poet named Naomi Shihab Nye, and it's called Making a Fist. For the first time on the road north of Tampico, I felt the life sliding out of me, a drum in the desert harder and harder to hear. I was 7. I lay in the car watching the palm trees swirl a sickening pattern past the glass. My stomach was a melon split wide inside my skin. How do you know if you're going to die? I begged my mother. We had been traveling for days. With strange confidence, she answered, when you can no longer make a fist. Years later, I smile to think of that journey, the borders we must cross separately, stamped with our unanswerable woes. I, who did not die, who am still living, still lying in the back seat behind all my questions, clenching and opening one small hand. I love that poem. And now we are going to enjoy a song called Sing Gently by Eric Whitaker.
The wrong screen.
Sorry, try again here. Are we seeing the video now?
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, that was beautiful. Thank you very much for finding that beautiful song. So every person, consider that two-word phrase for a thoughtful moment, every person. Unitarian Universalism is guided by a foundational principle that includes the phrase every person, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. It is important to note that this principle is precise in not bringing to mind the generalized multitudes, as in the phrase all people, but rather the specificity of every person, much like that song began with faces of individual people. Every person with a name, every person with a face, every person with a story, every person with worth and value and dignity. Now, how succinct and unequivocal our first principle, and also, frankly, how challenging. At another congregation, I recorded a sermon recently during the heat of the election season, and the sermon focused on our first principle. And afterward, the congregant, a volunteer camera person who was wearing a dark black mask emblazoned with four white letters, V-O-T-E, approached me and said, "Nice sermon, but I take issue with what you said. There's at least one person I know without any inherent worth and dignity." And I said, "Well, who's that?" "Dick Cheney." Now, for those of you who need a quick refresher, Dick Cheney was the vice president for George W. Bush and was considered by many to be the actual president when it came to running the country and exercising shrewd political power that essentially President Bush was, in essence, a ventriloquist dummy for the mastermind that was Dick Cheney. Now, this brief conversation with a masked camera person calling the phrase every person into question took place out loud and behind masks within a sanctuary of a Unitarian Universalist fellowship, within an empty sanctuary on a weekday when the sermon was being recorded out of an abundance of caution for the health of the local community during a global pandemic, within a sanctuary where during the previous 60 minutes of recording, candles were lit, hymns sung, silence held, poems read, piano played, joy celebrated, sorrows felt, and attention called forth and cultivated. Now, each and every element of that service was intended to call forth our better angels, to allow us to access our deepest humanity and feel a genuine grandeur of spirit. And looking at that masked congregant, I tried to figure out how to respond. How do you responsibly respond? "Well," I said, "I guess that's the growing edge of our religious practice, to recognize the inherent worth and dignity of each and every Dick Cheney. Because to be sure, there are millions upon millions of Dick Cheneys, people we don't agree with, and seem to take special delight in running roughshod over the values that we try to bring into the world." Now, the eyes above that black and white vote mask just stared back at me in silence. Now, while I couldn't read their entire face, I could palpably sense their incredulity. Now, we all know that religious practice can be challenging when it meets the hardball political world where lawyers, guns, and money have control over so many levers of power. The Dalai Lama's sublime message of "my religion is kindness," or Jesus's message, his teaching of "love thy neighbor as thyself," well, they get patted on the head and told to scurry off and go enjoy some milk and cookies. And now consider this two-word phrase for a thoughtful moment: democratic process. The guiding principles of Unitarian Universalism include the phrase democratic process in the fifth principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and society at large. Now, I hope that we all held that principle close to our hearts during this election season. A proper democratic process recognizes that every person, every worthy and dignified person is included, is listened to, and that their voice is heard and their vote counted. And by doing so, Every person becomes invested in a free and fair democratic process while co-creating and caring for the community. As Unitarian Universalists, we should be absolutely thrilled with this recent election, not because of the results per se, but because of the participation. And consider this excerpt from USA Today from a couple of days ago. Quote, "Let's take a moment to celebrate the voters and the election officials who pulled off a triumph of civic participation in modern American politics. About 160 million people voted in the 2020 general election. This is the most number of people who have voted in any American election. And the United States just experienced record levels of voter engagement. Congratulations, us," right? And also, this happened within a global pandemic. In fact, it happened because of a pandemic, which forced the necessity of mail-in ballots. Two-thirds of those eligible to vote participated. It's as if those powerful two-word phrases of this religion, of our religion, every person, and democratic process were combined in powerful ways. Now, that said, I trust that you felt strained during this long slog and bitter fight that has been the 2020 general election, especially during this last week. I know that I have. I barely slept on election night, lying wide awake at 3 o'clock in the morning, tossing and turning, trying to get back to sleep. But I finally decided who's fooling who. I climbed out of bed. I trudged downstairs to check on the presidential election results. And frankly, I did so with a deep sense of foreboding because I'd seen this movie before. And while my candidate had neither won nor lost, I was actually deeply saddened that the race was still underway, because I was expecting the better angels of our country to come out by the tens of millions in a landslide of love and of sanity that would sweep the incumbent out of office and usher in a resounding and overwhelming victory that would change the tenor of national discourse, if in fact you can call what we've been experiencing discourse. This election was even close, was deeply puzzling at best and profoundly unsettling at worst. And there I was at the kitchen table hours before dawn, sipping decaf coffee in deep wonderment about the state of our republic. And when I'm in that state of mind, I often reach for a pencil and a piece of scrap paper. And with these simple words in hand, I wrote these, or tools in hand, I wrote these words on the back of an envelope: "I love my mother." And then these words: "I love my father. I love my mother, and I love my father, and I am certain that they did not vote for the candidate that I voted for, that they went to bed on election night quite pleased with the vote tallies, that the way things looked at the time, the state-shaped shades of deep red and rosy pink coloring large expanses of the country. When I looked at the map of the country that post-election morning, the map that I thought should have been a vast sea of blue, I realized that my beloved parents did their part to help keep the map red. And in the framework of binary choices, one side of our family voted blue, one side of our family voted red. And such is us versus us, people who love each other, who do anything for one another, who lived in the same house and ate the same food and brushed their teeth with the same toothpaste, would grow to have radically divergent political viewpoints and proudly express them on their ballots, passionately different viewpoints informed and supported by different media. And yet through role modeling, this mother and this father showed all three of their children in no uncertain terms the sacred responsibility of voting, of making your voice heard within democracy. Democracy kept healthy through consistent and informed participation. I love my mother. I love my father. And I love the lessons that they taught me about being a responsible citizen. And now that said, we mutually decided years ago to stop talking about politics. prior to that detente, many dinners ended when someone rushed from the table in a peak of anger or frustration. And it reminds me of a time in my late teens when I was invited to a formal military dinner. My host was an old high school friend who had become an ROTC cadet in college. And he informed me before this formal dinner that his superiors informed him that there were two rules to abide by during dinner. And he wanted to make certain that I knew and understood the rules. One, do not talk about politics. Two, do not talk about religion. These topics, he told me, are where passions run deep and minds are hard to change. It is not a good combination for pleasant dinner conversation. Now, I know from firsthand experience that religion and politics over dinner generally don't help digestion. Conversations about religion and politics can be tense and knotted, righteous and emotional, judgmental and biting. There are more appropriate places to discuss and explore the topics of religion, the passions of politics, and the dinner table, generally not one of them. And you are welcome to apply this basic military dinner wisdom at your Thanksgiving table this pandemic holiday season. Now, I actually brought that simple rule back to my house because I love my mother and I loved my father. And I grew weary of half-eaten meals ending in tears and the pot roast, one steaming and delicious, all of a sudden losing its zing and its flavor. And all this to say, the tens of millions of people who voted one way and the tens of millions of people who voted another way suggest that much of our country has some version of this story. Loved ones who voted differently than you. And please take a deep and humbling comfort in this realization. They are just as dumbfounded by your vote as you are of theirs. And I think dumbfounded is a great place to stew for a while, but not too long. And then, speaking of the word dumb, very quick story. I was actually visiting my parents last fall. They live in this ruby red Republican-controlled county. I was driving around town and I decided to visit a thrift store that happened to be flying a big, I mean big, Trump flag. What the hell, I thought. I went inside looking around for a vintage cast iron frying pan, and then I saw a donkey statue. The donkey, of course, being the symbol for the Democratic Party. And behind the statue was a handmade lettered sign, lettered in red and blue magic marker. Are you a Democrat or just a jackass? Now, I was taking a snapshot of this sign to send to my liberal friends back on the left coast when the proprietor of the store tried to sell me a bright red Make America Great Again baseball hat. And without having figured out whether I was a Democrat or a jackass or both, I replied with a bit of edge in my voice, I wouldn't be caught dead wearing that thing. And we stared at each other. We let the silence hang like a dank fog that could have been cut with a bayonet, which in fact he sold bayonets in his store. And I thought back to that brief interaction many times, wondering whether there was a more gracious way to decline his sales pitch. And the quick answer is, of course there was. A polite, no thank you, comes to mind. And as mentioned, I was visiting my parents, so when I got back to their house, I told them the story of my MAGA hat adventure, and my mother asked with an inviting laugh, don't you want to make America great? We were sitting at the dining room table, of all places, the site of so many tense dinner conversations over the years. Fox News was flickering somewhere on a television set somewhere in the house. Mom, I don't want to make America that kind of great. We had the grace to leave it there, which brings us to election night 2020. A mere 5 days ago, a member of my family in their early 20s who identifies as queer, who has a pre-existing condition that they will have to manage their entire life with expensive medications, called in a panic. When the electoral map was trending red and pink, they called in tears. They were totally and deeply freaked out that the election that they thought would be a massive blue tsunami was more like a gently lapping farm pond, and they did not mince their election night words, and in a voice that was cracking with emotion, "I don't understand how these gun-loving racists can't see 230,000 dead bodies." Now, mind you, the person saying this sentence grew up a Unitarian Universalist. They know the first principle by heart. And with all due respect to the heat of the moment, when you turn a person with inherent worth and dignity into a gun-loving racist, you abandon the power and the beauty of your religion. You abandon the power and the beauty of this religion. This religion is yours to make real in the world. And in fact, Unitarian Universalism cannot exist outside actual persons actually practicing the religion. And please listen again to the first words of that freaked out call. "I don't understand." And to me, that is an opening for this profound and humbling question. Would you like to understand? Would you like to understand? Would you like to catalyze our fourth principle, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning? As Unitarian Universalists in 2020, we are called to try to understand, because at this point in our nation's soul life, we are living through a bitterly divided period of us versus us. One us colored deep blue. One us colored deep red. And the us's separated by a sharp and pointed versus. And moving forward, we need to minimize that sharp versus and maximize the uniting us. And with the 2020 election behind us, the growing edge of our religious practice is to recognize the inherent worth and dignity of every person, especially those who voted differently than our particular us. Starting there is what our religious practice calls us to do. And to say it as plain as day, it is hard to recognize the inherent worth and dignity of a Democrat or a jackass or a gun-loving racist, those pernicious labels that belittle and dehumanize. As stated earlier, our religious practice is profoundly challenging. Are we prepared to help move this democracy forward and live on the growing edge of our religious faith by recognizing the inherent worth and dignity of everyone? During this election season, I stood face to face with a masked man with the letters V-O-T-E emblazoned on a black mask. He told me in no uncertain terms, inside a sanctuary, that he was struggling with his religious practice and did not know whether he could find the worth and dignity within another human being with whom he disagreed politically. Another human being who, like me, like you, loves your mother, loves your father. And if I knew then what I know now, I would have gifted him a new white mask with big red and blue letters across the front that spelled L-O-V-E. And as the president-elect concluded his victory speech yesterday, he told a lovely story that whenever he left his grandparents' house after a visit, his grandfather would say, "Joey, keep the faith." And then his grandmother would say, "No, Joey, spread the faith." And as we turn the page on this historically consequential election, it is historically consequential that we UUs follow that wise grandmother's deep wisdom. Spread the faith of the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Amen.